Kayla Sakura with Timlella. The Hausa word means, it refers to a person who is full of love and who strives to create harmony wherever they are. This is Hugh Masekela, as I said, anti-apartheid activist. He died last year at the age of 78, and a favorite of mine, and introduced in a way. Now, I say in a way because the movement was already had already taken root in South Africa, which is a merging of indigenous music influenced by jazz. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. This is the program that gives you the opportunity to vent, to say what's on your mind, to make your points. You don't have all day to do it. You have a little bit of time because we do have quite a few people who like to express themselves. But it is dedicated to you. There's no set format. We dispense with our regular format if you're joining us, just so you know. And it is a free-form, open forum. You take the conversation where you want it to go. We'll see whether people react. Or maybe I would ask a question or two to help you clarify things. But this is essentially your program. And you get on the air at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. It would be very helpful. In fact, it is practically mandatory that you have a point of view. Don't just get on and start yammering. You should have a point to your presentation today. All right, we start off in Berkeley, California, with Harvey.
Hello, Harvey. Hello, fabulous Eutrice.
Hello, fabulous Harvey. What's on your mind today?
Well, I just want to say thanks once again for giving me the opportunity to spend a few minutes with you and your vast, wonderful audience. And because we're living in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, I'd like to share a few thoughts about what I consider to be the most deadly virus that has ever hit our planet, a virus that has, over time, destroyed hundreds of millions of lives, a virus for which there is no vaccine. And I'm talking about a virus of the mind called hate. A pandemic of hate has been with us since the dawn of time. Hate is an emotion that has its roots in anger, fear, and disgust, which often erupts into acts of social violence. And there are endless examples of this virus of hate that infects people. The recent killing on May 25th, 2020, of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officer Dennis Chauvin shows us how hate leads to murder, where for any number of reasons, be they political, religious, racial, and or jealousy, people put other people in harm's way. If and when you find yourself wanting to hurt or kill people, for whatever reason, you, my friend, have been infected by the virus of hate. You are now an employee of the Grim Reaper, who's an equal opportunity employer. And the virus of hate has destroyed the lives of countless millions of men, women, and children. So what's the answer? How do we control this worst of all pandemics? The first step is to realize that you've been infected by this virus of the mind. For example, down through time, unscrupulous leaders like our current President Donald Trump and his administration have used the virus of hate to divide and conquer us. The first step is to learn to control your anger. I personally won't let Trump and his minions destroy my positive outlook by turning his murderous propaganda into constructive use, just as one of my heroes, Dr. Martin Luther King, would have done. It's time to just say no to the virus of hate or face the consequences, including the use of nuclear weapons, which will surely destroy all life on our planet, on our precious and fragile small planet called Mother Earth. And I just want to thank you once again, Utrice, for standing strong against the spread of hatred. And we all love you very much.
Oh, thank you. Back at you. Thanks so much, Harvey, for getting us started off today. And I dare say, on a perfect note. Jackie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, Utrice.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you. I wanted to talk about this issue of defund versus reorganize the police. I'm asking that people begin to think about all the monies that have been paid out through city government when there's a finding that the police committed some act and killed or injured people. Then they're sued by the individuals and there's a settlement. But that settlement money comes out of taxpayers' funds. It doesn't come out of the police department. So I'm asking that people begin to ask their elected officials for accounting of how many millions of dollars have been paid out of taxpayers' funds to settle legal judgments against the police department in their various jurisdictions. There's a big uproar. I'm in Brooklyn, as you know. There's a big uproar here about the whole issue of revealing police, and now it's fire department, correctional department. A lot of other people, other unions have joined in to stop the revealing of the disciplinary records of these uniform people. So I think we need to look at this in the terms of how much money is this costing taxpayers versus not only the police department budget, but the budgets of the various cities. Okay, be blessed.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Thanks for calling in. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Hello?
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 Yes, how are you? On the air.
Yes, I would just like to know how you're doing. I hope all is well with you and the listener audience. I'm calling in reference
Hold on for a second. There's something happening in the background. Okay, I don't hear
it
anymore.
I got it now.
It sounded like something was on.
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I was calling in reference to the pandemic and the leadership in this country in regards to dealing with this pandemic is deplorable. I mean, you have a person that's supposed to be the head of the United States, the president, that has basically casted the pandemic aside for his so-called reelection to the White House. And I don't know if the American people are really in tune or aware of how this pandemic is spreading and how there is no leadership whatsoever in regards to how to bring this thing in, and that we are allowing this institutions of the United States to get away with it by these different governors making different assertions, plans, and agendas in regards to this pandemic. I mean, you could see what's going on in the Atlanta area, the Georgia area, with this Governor Kemp. I mean, it is just unbelievable. He's now suing the mayor of Atlanta, I think her last name is Bottoms, in regards to her saying that she wants the residents to wear face masks while they're out. When it's being shown that face masks is something that helps slow down the pandemic. Now, here it is. You have a situation where the CBC and the United States is no longer getting information from the hospital. It's now going directly to the White House, which is unprecedented. It's just ridiculous. It's just immoral. It's everything that is basically wrong with what's going on. And you have people in society who are not questioning this and who are not in an uproar over this. There's just something fundamentally wrong.
I think people are questioning things. They've just become exasperated. And many people believe that there's nothing they can do. The people that they are appealing to, that is the people, the regular people, the people that they are appealing to, don't seem to be able to do anything. It's like spitting in the wind.
Well, I don't know what it is, but it's causing great tragedy within the country. I mean, you know, I had to laugh when Chuck Willoughby went out there and said that there's no thing as the coronavirus and that it's a hoax and all this and that, and didn't turn around and sunbits it. So, I mean, it's just little things like that that just makes one have to start wondering, what kind of country are we in? What are the chances of this man getting reelected because of the ignorance of the American public and the American people, and how with that ignorance is totally going to be devastating and destructive to not only here, but around the world. And it seems like people don't know what to do.
People are in different places. They're in different places on the question of what to do. Certainly, for the most part, they don't think people are listening. The people who should be doing something, the ordinary people don't have, except the power of protest. They don't really have legislative power, which is what is needed to interfere with the scheme of things as they're going on now. So in a sense, they're frustrated and they're giving up, because no matter what they do, there is an overarching system that bats it right back to them and does nothing further with their anger, with their objection, with their protest. So people are becoming increasingly fed up. And in that state, they also are checking out. They don't want to participate in this anymore.
Well, we better wake up soon. And as a country, we better do something, or this thing is going to get more and more tragic. And the sad thing is, our children are now going to be faced in harm, danger. I'm saying this on your ear, and if anybody disagrees with me, that's your issue and that's your problem. Do not send your kids back to the schools in September and August. Please don't do that to your kids, because your kids are in jeopardy of catching the virus and passing it along to you and your family members. And God forbid, don't have your mother and your father, their grandparents, in that home with you, because it's no telling what may happen. And it's going to happen. Believe me, it's going to happen.
Thank you so much.
And we have to be on top of this. And have a good day.
Thanks for contributing. Thank you. Francis from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hi, Latrice. Hope you're well.
Hope you're well, too. I'm hanging
in. I know, right? So I didn't want to be a phone hog and call in every day, because I'm legally blind, so I don't get your podcast directly. I listen after the fact on the 701 number, and so I know it was call in Friday. So is this a free Friday or?
Yeah, this is free on mine Friday.
Yeah, okay. All right, so I was just listening to the previous gentleman. Okay, I think we're all exasperated. I remember when he first went that night when the elections were going on, and I just got I got really sick to my stomach. I mean, literally physically sick, because I knew that he was going to get in. And so been exasperated, you know, over the whole thing, but you have to struggle, you have to keep going on, you have to keep trying to do something. So I think after, you know, just completely frustrated with what's going on at the federal level, what I had decided to do was last year, I decided to figure out what was going on, what's going on in my local government, try to see if I could, you know, get involved there, see if anything I could do. At least be doing something positive instead of just sitting and saying, well, I can't do anything. So I've really gotten involved. I know how the government, you know, our city government works and everything now. And, you know, before the shutdown, I was going, first I started going to monthly, you know, meetings. And then I started going to committee meetings, and let them know that I'm there, and I try to speak to some of the representatives before and after the meeting, and other people are there, and contributing and, you know, putting 2 cents in and trying, hopefully, you know, change at least some things here locally, you know, and I'm doing that, and yes, I'm very concerned, but there's only so much you can do. You try to help your family. I'm concerned about my grandchildren, you know, and because at least I guess I can say that I'm kind of not sheltered because I'm, you know, concerned about everything else, but me being, you know, disabled and retired, I don't have to go out here and worry about the working situation and so on like that. But I am concerned about, you know, my my daughter and my son and, you know, their families. And, you know, I try to, you know, be there as a sounding board and, you know, talk to them and try to educate them as to what's really going on. And trying to, I guess, stay positive, I guess, if you want to say that's what it is. You know, but, you
are
know,
they
you
as involved as you are?
Pardon me?
Are they as involved as you are?
Well, you know, they're younger and they're just trying to figure out how they're going to continue keeping a job and trying to keep, you know, mm-hmm. money coming in and food on the table, you know. And I mean, it's getting harder and harder. I mean, you go to school, you know, you go to school and they've graduated, you know, from college and so on, and, you know, the pickings, you know, for jobs and so on that pays decent money is getting slimmer and slimmer and slimmer as the ruling class pulls more and more money out of the system. So, I mean, it's very worrisome, you know, to think, you know, how they're going to, you know, make it to retirement age and what's going to happen between then and what kind of jobs and opportunities going to be there for my grandchildren. You know, so I don't know what to say. Just have to keep, you know, step by step and hoping that, I don't know, with Biden getting in, I don't know. It's definitely better than Trump, but I'm concerned about him, too, because I must have missed a memo somewhere. I mean, you know, to this whole thing, you know, the police are, you know, killing, you know, our men mostly, just under small pretenses and so on like that, and no one's really said anything. And now they're framing it as some kind of public health situation, where I see it as a civil rights and human rights situation. So I must miss a memo somewhere of how this got framed that way. I'm not understanding that.
Well, you know, public health also includes things like mass murder. It's a public health issue. Any development where people's lives literally at risk goes beyond civil rights. In terms of governing, it becomes a public health issue, too. Violence is a public health issue. The escalating numbers of young people who are dying from drug overdoses and violence, this is a public health issue. We are not accustomed to thinking of it that way.
No, we're not. So I guess, so this, you say this is a positive development, them framing it this way now?
So we have to appreciate the fact that, yes, in many ways, this is a public health issue as well. It is on its face. We know that it is about a social problem, a major social problem. But when you look at it in a different way, you see, yes, the argument could be made that it's a public health issue as well. A drug overdose does not on its face look like a public health issue. But when enough people are dying from drug overdoses, you can see the implications there. It becomes a public health issue because these people have to be treated. They have to be detoxified. All of these things involve their health. So we are not accustomed to thinking of these things as public health problems or public health issues, but they are.
Well, thank you for that. If you really have educated me on that one point, I am definitely going to be sitting down with my daughter and my son and son-in-law, and you know, and I would definitely am going to. I didn't understand it. This is kind of new for me, the way they were framing it, but I tell you, I get it. So I'm definitely going to pass this along and make sure that they only understand that.
So now you're in a position to teach about public health in a different way.
Yes. I just hope
thank
that,
you.
Well, okay, thank you very much.
No, finish your sentence.
I know, I just want to, you know, because other people I don't want to get on, but it's like, yeah, I just didn't understand that one little point. I said, I must have missed something somewhere, but now you're framing it that way, you know, that now I get it, and I would definitely will sit down and have conversations about that. And,
great.
You know, so thank you very
great.
Much for
That's
that.
Great. Thank you, Francis, for calling in. From Chicago, Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Trice, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
Oh, it is, it's the calm before the heat. Today it's about...
Oh, no!
Well, you know, today it's about 80, 85 degrees.
Well, you mean it in a literal sense. I thought you were talking in a figurative sense. Okay.
Well, tomorrow it's going to get about 100. So it's the calm before
wow.
the heat. So yeah, so we're trying to get prepared, trying to buy water, you know, making sure our AC units are up and running. So yeah, so we're going to be inundated with heat for the next 2 days starting tomorrow. But
oh, wow.
you know, I wanted to make this call because it's going to be an easy call, and Lord knows you've taken a lot of tough calls over this past week and over you know a couple of weeks. But you know, I wanted to just call you just to commend you how much me and probably some other people who listen to you, you know, we admire how, you know, you handle more critically when it comes
Henry,
to
Henry, are you there?
Yeah. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay. You kind of faded out there for a minute.
Oh, I'm sorry. But yeah, so I'm just calling to kind of like commend you and how much I admire you. And I put you in the pantheon of a lot of
ooh,
the great.
Ooh, I'm in a pantheon. Oh
yes,
my gosh,
yes.
This is a
you
serious
are,
promotion
are,
here.
Yes, you are in the pantheon of great black female journalists, like Gwen Ifill, Zora Neale Hurston,
yes.
And you know I often call you the reincarnation of Ida B. Wells. I think I
oh,
said that.
Oh, my main hero. That's
yes,
my
so,
girl.
You are it. You are the reincarnation of Ida B. Wells, and this is not necessarily, like I said, to say that I agree with everything that you say, but
right.
I respect what you say because of the fact that you have very valid and thought out opinions about things. So, you know, we always have to say, you know, please give people the flowers before they go by. You know, before they go by in this life. So I'm giving you your flowers and,
oh,
you know.
oh, gee, thank you. That really gets to my heart. Thank you so much.
Yes, and I hope, like I said, I hope people appreciate you while you're still here because, you know, there have been a lot of great people who were here, but they never appreciated them when they were alive. You know, and you probably know this too. You know, Zora Neale Hurston was not a great, she was not very known until she passed away because, you know, she died in obscurity, you know, and it wasn't until later literature that they finally realized, oh, wow, this woman was actually a pretty good journalist.
Oh, you make a very strong point because I myself have said it about other people who have gone before me. Who in their lifetime were doing incredible work, but were not heralded for it. And after they died, oh, everybody is rushing to say something good. Get out of here.
Exactly. And you introduced me to a lot of people that I would have never known about. Like, for one, I would have never known who Dr. Gerald Horn was until I heard
oh,
him on
he's coming up soon. He's going to be with us soon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. And what was so interesting is from one historian to another, I found you listening to or watching a video of Dr. John Henry Clark. And that's how
My buddy.
So
my
from one
buddy and pal.
From one great historian to another, you know, now I've been introduced to another great historian, and he actually introduced me to another historian, Dr. Greg Carr, who's still alive and still professor at Howard University, who to me I consider another great historian as well. But this is the middle of the chain that you have introduced me to, Leetree. So
oh, wow.
I just want to thank
you
for everything that you have given me.
Thank you. On a personal note, the one thing I remember about Dr. Clark, above everything else, above his scholarship even, was what a funny man he was. He would make you laugh until you pee on yourself. He was such a funny guy. After his lectures, from time to time, I would take him home, him and his wife. But all the way home, he would be telling jokes and we would be howling in the car. People who are passing us look at us and say, what's going on in there? We are gyrating because we're laughing and can't control ourselves because of things he would say. He was a man of great sense of humor, and I remember that most, apart from, of course, his scholarship and his dedication to it. But his sense of humor was enviable, that's for sure. Well, thanks for your compliment today. You lifted my spirits, and I thank you for that.
Thank you for all your hard work, Leetree.
Thank you. Thank you, Henry. Lincoln Brown from Mount Vernon, you're on the air.
Hey, how are you, Leetree?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I am persevering as usual. In the midst of it all and through it all, I constantly persevere. I take a different approach to all of this. And I think most of us are being disingenuous. And I think most of us are looking at analyzing all of this. And I don't mean to be insulting.
But what is this that you're referring to, by the way?
Oh, the present situation that we find ourselves in, Donald Trump, COVID, Russiagate, all of this, the present situation we find ourselves in, or actually created for ourselves. I think, you know, we are taking a very, very... for lack of a better word, a puerile approach, puerile interpretation. And I think we're also being disingenuous. I think
you're saying the same thing over and over. Make your point. Go ahead.
So I have to say that to say all of this. I am not exasperated with Donald Trump. And Donald Trump is not our problem. We are our problem. And the war we're in is our problem. A lot of what is going on is not due to Donald Trump. It is due to the war, the infighting with the CIA and the FBI agents and the mainstream media and the people who supported Hillary Clinton, etc., and their disgruntlement with him winning and not being truthful to the fact that there was a coup that was planned, shouldn't Casey win, and after he won, the coup continued, like Russiagate, etc. It is WikiLeaks proved that it's such a huge lie. And all of us who call ourselves activists, etc., because we despise Trump, we continue to lie to ourselves about this.
Where's your proof?
I'm going to show you some of the things.
You don't have all day sharing the program with others. So get to the answer that part for me, because I'm particularly intrigued by your confidence in what you say, but I'm not hearing any reference to documents or truths or of any kind. So I'm not so sure whether you are solid in your opinion.
One of the best things Trump said was Russia and America should get along. And they demonized him for that. And said everybody, even on this program, kept saying, oh, he's in Putin's back pocket. He's Putin's girlfriend, etc. It was so stupid. Two countries with that could blow us to smithereen should get along. And why were people condemning him for that? When he had meetings with the leader of North Korea, it was good. That should happen. And they demonized him for that. And we know about what his name, Peter Strzok and Lisa Page. There was even a taping where Peter Strzok said, we're not going to make this effort win. And if he does, we're going to go to plan B. And we ignore all of that. And so what is going on right now is nothing but people's hate for this man. And I am not a supporter of Trump because I'm against what he did to the Central Park Five, and also against him talking about invading Venezuela. And I'm also against him talking about taking Syria's oil. But at the same time, I am not going to hide behind Trump. Imagine Hillary Clinton, after she actually orchestrated the destruction of Libya, people were still. And there's a white lady who calls all the time. She said she was once married to a black man. I think, and she's always, you know, I think she's also supportive of Bernie Sanders, you know, who sounds like they're oblivious to all of this and ignore all of this. They're ignoring nothing Trump has done was as wicked as what Hillary Clinton did. And nobody's saying anything
about that. You're engaging in a discussion on a comparative analysis of evil. Hillary Clinton is evil. Donald Trump is evil. Now what?
No, what I'm saying is that's not how we speak on this.
No, but you are championing support of Donald Trump. And you there were other people, namely Hillary Clinton, who was just as, in fact, even more so objectionable.
No, I'm not championing Donald Trump. What I'm saying to you is we're ignoring the truth. And as I pointed out...
But how do you know the truth? Here you go. You're championing the truth. This man has been, still is, and probably will be until his last breath, an inveterate liar.
The rest of them are liars. Look at what Biden was talking about with Ukraine.
But that is not the answer. That's not the answer to the question. I didn't ask you who else are liars.
But the others, you said he's an inveterate liar.
No, I'm not interested in the others. We're both talking about Donald Trump. I'm asking you, how is it that you are so comfortable now in defending Trump's actions when, in fact, he is an inveterate liar?
You're putting words
but
in my
you,
mouth.
But you see merit in defending him.
I'm not defending him. I'm not defending him. That's not what I said. No, you're misconstruing what
you're
I
defending.
Say,
you're defending conceptually. You're defending the truth.
No, I'm not.
We should stand up for the truth.
Right.
The implication is the truth, such as Trump presents. And I'm saying, how could you live with that? Don't you see that as a contradiction?
No. You see, I didn't say to you the truth as Trump presents. I never said that.
I'm interpreting that. But you're saying this is one of the reasons that you are having trouble because you can't understand how people don't see the truth.
I can understand. I didn't
because
I didn't
it's
understand.
Presented
I understand.
By Trump.
We are in denial. I understand. We are in denial because people want to see what they want to see and hear what they want to hear. They want to demonize who they want to demonize and make a hero of who they choose to make a hero. And they
but
don't
you notice, but you are aware that you're doing exactly the same thing.
No, I'm not.
Okay. But it just comes across that way then.
No, if you hear what I said, that's why I was prefacing myself, why I gave myself that long preface, because I was trying to lay the foundation on which I was going
we
to
get it.
My
we
conclusion.
Get it. But I'm just saying mm-hmm. that in your presentation, your prequel, and then in the presentation, you yourself don't recognize a contradiction. And there
no,
are yawning
contradictions that was
there. But you dismissed them.
It was contradictory. Everything I said was incongruent. Not one thing I uttered was contradictory. It might
okay.
not be the common narrative, but it was not contradictory. Because
all
everybody,
right.
it's so easy to demonize Trump. But we can't look evenly across the board at the truth.
The thing is, we got caught up in the personality. I'm beyond Trump.
I am not caught in personality.
For years, I've been beyond Trump. What I'm trying to get from you in order to understand what your point is. First of all, it's not new. You're making a point that people have been making for years. Look beyond the person speaking and listen to what is being said and evaluate it on that basis. Whereas the common and normal way that people are operating is they're one and the same. You associate what is being said with the person, and they're one and the same, and they're not. And you're right. You're absolutely correct on that. But I see, however, that even as you say that, you contradict yourself.
Let's
There's
take
no
a look
way
at
you could
let's take a look
maintain
at
your position and separate Trump from his position. There's no way you could do it. It's one and the same. You can't hold out Trump to be a deceiver, a liar, a guy with not to be trusted, and so forth and so on, and then say, but what he is saying here is the truth.
I've never said such.
I'm interpreting from what you say. This is what I distill from your position.
My position is, let's be honest and let's be objective. Let's drop all the emotions and the subjectivity and let's analyze what is going on. And then we will see clearly. Everyone I hear speaking mostly, it's all murky and they sound fancy. But when you really check it out, it's all coming from a despise from this guy, which they haven't gotten over, Hillary losing, about this white woman breaking this ceiling. And that's what most of this is. And also those black people who they are so mesmerized by Bill Clinton ever since he played a trombone on our senior hall show. That's what a lot of this is going on.
With sunglasses on, no doubt. No less. Okay, well, I'm having trouble. On one level, what you say makes sense. We shouldn't do so and so and so. We shouldn't come to these conclusions. But I'm trying to figure out, what world are you living in?
This world.
Well, I think you have to check. Because
no, I am a very...
We have been exposed enough to Donald Trump to make it automatic that whatever he says is not to be trusted. What if he says the sky is blue, go outside and look for yourself. Don't take him at his word.
I give you one good example. When he mentioned the use of that drug and everybody said, oh, he's not a doctor. Why is he suggesting that? Okay. Then they found out that the drug he mentioned was actually working. But nobody said...
Well, the drug was for malaria. And by the time, this is a good example. I'm glad you raised that. Because at the time he said it, by the time he said it, there were 638 million doses of that drug that he had put in store. People, he had directed his people to buy 600 with taxpayers' money, even though, even at that point, scientists had come out strongly against the drug. But he didn't say that. Because he made a deal.
This is a drug that has been used over in Africa and on throughout the world.
Yeah, but for malaria. For malaria, not for COVID. But he decided to take on whatever the business arrangement was, whatever the money was that was involved in this deal, he ordered the purchase of 638 million doses of the drug, which had not even been discussed publicly. This was a secret move. And I strongly suspect there was a lot of money changing hands. And beyond ordering the 638 million doses of the drug, he also agreed to be a salesman for it. He was extolling the virtues of hydroxychloroquine before it was even a topic of discussion. He acted as the salesman. Because he had 638 million doses in the federal storehouse. So somebody got a lot of money for ordering that. Then Trump follows through as a salesman for it. And then further follows through by saying, I take it. What do you make of that? He's following the same pattern of a liar and a deceiver. And it didn't matter whether he put people's lives in danger. He was extolling the value of a drug that had not been tested and approved for the treatment of COVID. This is what I'm telling you. We have reached a point with Trump where he is what he says. And he's deceitful, he's a liar, and he need not be trusted. End of story for today. We'll pick up our debate another day. So just keep that in mind. Here's a president engaging in clandestine activity that could well have cost innocent people their lives, because he would have, and maybe this was one of the things that he got into a fight with Dr. Fauci over, compelling that this drug be prescribed for the treatment of COVID. He had 638 million doses secreted away in federal storehouses that would have ended up in the bodies of all these Americans unknowingly. He is the lowest of the low. I don't say that easily. That's what you fail to understand. He has reached a point where what he says must be accepted in the context of who he is and what he is. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yes, Yatrice, I'll try to get right to the point. Something that you said meant a lot to me when you talked about health, public health. The point is that, for example, those people who are dying of overdoses of drugs and whatnot makes me feel that we should get away completely from people who take substances that are currently illegal by law as a public health issue rather than a police issue. It should be completely away from criminal justice and police and dealt with as a public health issue that would benefit all people who are having difficulty with substances. Included in that was I feel that the other things that people do, like eating foods that are bad for them, that are not healthy, all the issues that people have with things like diabetes and obesity in the society, that's an important public health issue. So we ought to have public health come before solving problems with law enforcement and prisons for people who are having problems with substances. In addition, I feel that the emphasis should be on two other things. In creating a situation where people have jobs, that's number one. And not only worrying about private employers giving them jobs, but if people have cannot get jobs from private employers, there ought to be public jobs available for everyone. If I was in the White House, I would make certain that everyone had jobs, and I would create something like WPA to make sure that people could have jobs and living wage jobs. And in addition, I'd make housing a human right, that everyone would have housing. And the point is that that could be done. More than half of the federal budget goes to military expenditure. And I would cut that way down and emphasize those things that I'm talking about. Imagine near $100 billion goes every year for prisons, for people who use illegal drugs according to the law. And we could cut that down, turn it into public health, and also emphasize the jobs and housing. And I've been talking about that on my video, Brother Dave from Brooklyn Speaks, so people can look at it there too. So that's the way
it's
I
on YouTube. You should do yourself a little
short,
plug here, David.
So
it's on YouTube. Brother David from Brooklyn Speaks.
Right.
Okay.
So that's my
I've seen a couple of the issues covered, and I've talked to David about his program. I find it informative, even though it is just starting out.
That's right,
just
starting out. But I'm going to say the things they can't talk about on corporate media. That's what I do. I talk about things that they wouldn't dare talk about in corporate media. So I think people enjoy it if they listen to or look at Brother David Brooklyn Speaks. So thank you very much for all you do, Yatrice. And
thank
I love you.
You
very much for all your great work.
Thank you so much. Right back at you. Willie from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, beloved.
Hello, Willie.
I respect you. Listen.
Respect you,
Your program yesterday, while you were talking about reparation, you know, from my standpoint, black people are really not, majority black people are not qualified to speak on reparation, because most of us don't know anything about slavery. You know, when you talk about, we don't know the devastation of what has happened to our people and still is happening as a result of slavery. Well, I remember when a couple of years ago you went to Sweden, right? You were to discuss that issue. We have to have people like you, Sir Hillary Beckles, Dr. Claude Anderson, Minister Farr, these are the people who are qualified to speak on it. We are not, because we have no clue. We think it's about money. Money has to, first of all, the money has no value. So forget about the money.
Well, you know, I'm not going to go that far. I say give up the money too. Because yeah, money is owed in the trillions of dollars.
I understand that, Utrecht. I understand that. But
so then that ought to be part of the conversation.
But Utrecht, the U.S. dollar is not worth anything. It's only being backed up.
Huh? Even so, even if it is for purely symbolic reasons, we cannot exclude money because it is a vital part of the value in our society of a person. Your labor has value. And in this society, it is measured by the money you earn for it. So whether the dollar is up in value or down in value, that's not the point. The point is there has to be a recognition. The money owed. There has to be a recognition for the money owed because of the value of what was contributed under slavery, being forced to do so and still not getting paid. That's a huge part of the issue, as far as I'm concerned. We have to assess a value. We have to have that as part of the discussion. Because if the dollar is down, well, then you get land in exchange. You get real estate in exchange.
Just like I said, majority of us are not qualified to discuss it. You will be at the table. Minister Farrakhan would say.
But everybody is qualified because everybody should understand the simple logic of it. Don't have money? All right. Give me the land instead.
What will be the
equivalent value of my labor, forced labor, the deaths of my forebears, working under horrible conditions and so forth? How do we arrive at an assessed value for what has been taken by force? And then in years ensuing, to have it transferred to newer and newer generations. We have to put a money value to it. It may be in the quadrillions of dollars.
That would be up to you and the great minds among us.
I don't claim to be a great mind in this at all. I think this is logic, and any ordinary person could pursue this logic and follow this logic and agree with it. Money, some form of recompense must be arrived at. It must be articulated. It must be calculated.
We all understand that, yes. But we do not know enough about this thing to really discuss it.
All right, we have people who know enough. We find them. And we have all kinds of clues. We have tax records, which we were not privy to. We have had all kinds of records, purchase of slaves, the value of their children and grandchildren in contributing to the economy. We have lots of ways of doing this. This is a subject we are going to explore in great detail, trust me. And since the city of Asheville, North Carolina, has unilaterally and totally agreed to reparations, it represents a very good start, a very promising start, and we build on it. And that's the end of our talk today. We're done. We're out of time. Thank you all for calling in and contributing. Thank you so much for your love and support. Right back at you. We could disagree, but always in love. We'll see each other on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend and surround yourselves with people who support you. Bye-bye.